Diese Folge wurde am 8. Februar 2020 aufgezeichnet. This episode was recorded on February 8th, 2020.
3, 2, 1.
Oh, this you crazy mother...
Willkommen bei Two Blacks and a Jew, der Podcast, in dem
Ezzie,
Nathan
und Vincent zumindest meistens darüber reden, wie wir als Minderheiten die Welt wahrnehmen. Manchmal auf Deutsch,
sometimes in English,
meistens auf Englisch. Let's drop some accordion in here.
Well, that was not cool the first time.
Welcome back!
Hello.
Hi.
We're all high energy. Yay!
Dearly that, beloved, we are gathered here today.
Because we're all sick.
Or have been sick.
Actually, it's not true. I'm not sick. I'm very healthy. I stopped smoking.
Yeah.
So all of us are recovering either from addiction or surgery.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No. My mother listens to this fucking podcast. There will be no talk.
You didn't tell her about your surgery?
I never said
anyways,
you had what.
I just had the flu. I just had a pretty bad flu. I was in bed for like over a week where I couldn't... Like, I got up and then I nearly literally fell down. And my roommate, my boyfriend, took a lot of care of me. It was a bad flu. It was a flu that I guarantee you came from some white person. Some white person in Europe. And not from some random Asian person who allegedly had corona. Can we talk about this racial hysteria, please?
Racial hysteria and coronavirus.
Yes, because it's ridiculous.
It's hilarious.
Oh, it's not hilarious. It's ridiculous.
It's like it's... Yeah, as I said, in its scope. Es ist einfach so dämlich. Es ist so dumm. Es ist so...
Es ist halt
so frustrating how widespread it is.
How white spread?
Yeah, that's what I heard too. That's what I heard too.
That is the episode title. White spread,
white spread.
Racial
white
hysteria.
Spread racial hysteria.
On toast.
Perfect.
Well, like on white bread.
Yeah. Avocado toast with some crescent.
The wonder bread. The wonder of white spread racial hysteria. Okay, maybe we should.
Yeah, I read that. Ich habe so eine Geschichte gelesen über einen Uber-Fahrer in New York, der sich dafür bedankt hat, dass der Kunde die Fahrt angenommen hat. He was Asian and no one was hiring him. Everybody was canceling their rides.
Yeah,
because he's Asian. Oh, coronavirus. I'm not riding with an Asian Uber driver.
And we should also clarify, when we say Asian or what people are talking about, like the Asian people that people are scared of or like today won't sit in the bus next to. That happened to me today in the bus. They won't... White people won't sit next to other Asian people for some reason. We're talking about East Asian looking people. We're not talking about the dude from Sri Lanka or the dark skinned dude from India.
The thing though about, ich hab's ja vorhin, I call it fear squared. When you have the fear of some illness combined with the fear of minorities, and suddenly it gives people an out to
let everything out.
To let their xenophobia out.
It's
and
interesting
so,
you're calling Asians a minority in that context.
Yeah, I was like,
because globally they aren't in
the European context.
Right. In the European, yeah. It's just about the way
the way
these fears combine. You have the fear of illness combined with the fear of the other, xenophobia. Mm-hmm.
But I do like,
and that gives people feel like they can now express, maybe subconsciously, these fears. And as I said, it's not only East Asians. It's just this coronavirus scare, because that's what it is. It's a stupid, idiotic scare. Makes people go, oh, they might have the coronavirus.
I think what we need to talk about is one coronavirus is just a word for any type of flu. It's a very specific type of
different kinds of coronaviruses that include viruses, yes, plural.
Not the Wuhan corona.
They include the common flu. They also include SARS coronavirus, mm-hmm. and they include the new 2019 nCoV, I think is the name.
And then SARS first seen...
SARS was first seen in China? China, I think.
You know,
and where? For SARS, you know, as they did this time, they covered up some of the evidence in the beginning.
Yeah, it doesn't have the case.
And that really led to some, you know, miscommunication globally, but then also to a lot of unnecessary fatalities.
But what are the symptoms of this also terrifying corona?
Basically, you're looking at the same symptoms that you're looking at for... I mean, it looks very similar to SARS in that you get fever, you get respiratory...
Distress. Distress. And if it gets bad, maybe potentially pneumonia. They can't see your smile.
Yes, I actually looked at a graph with a colleague the other day where they... where they plotted, so on the x-axis we saw how many people are infected so if you have one person that gets the illness or gets the virus, how many people is that person going to infect? And there it's around two or like between two and four people that catch the virus from one person.
Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of deadliness, you also have the same thing. So you're looking at 100 people, and then out of those, maybe two people die. And for a common flu, that would be 0.1 person dies. So out of 1,000 people, one person dies.
Mm-hmm.
And for corona, out of 1,000 people, 20 people die.
And who is more likely to get it?
The medical workers that are tending to the sick, mostly. And then basically anyone who's, you know, likely to get a virus from you anyways, which is your relatives, your friends, your colleagues.
And most people who live in Germany, they probably don't have Asian relatives or friends for that matter.
Or colleagues
come here to work. So if they're catching a flu, who are they catching it from?
I mean, it's not racial hysteria for a reason.
Exactly. Like, I just think it's ridiculous. I think it's ridiculous, dass ich heute habe ich gelesen, ich glaube, es war ein Zitat aus der Berliner Tageszeitung, von wegen, dass manche East Asian-owned restaurants and stores are reporting 50% decrease in their Umsätze. Like, that's just... And what bothers me more is not only, like, the everyday that I see, like, East Asian people in my life experiencing it, that they're documenting, thank God for social media in cases like this, is what bothers me is that the major news outlets, yeah, they're reporting, and there's some of them are doing the Ich bin kein Virus hashtag, they're reporting on that. But what bothers me is I have yet to see a major news outlet call it what it is. It's not a good flu, it's a bad flu. But all this hysteria is just racism and xenophobia. And I don't, what that bothers me. Like, why hasn't anyone called this out bigly, majorly, for what it is?
Don't use the word
bigly, please. Yeah, my mind went directly to Trump.
Yes. What's bigly?
We're going to look at this bigly.
No. Oh, no, my English just isn't as good as it used to be. Ich will kein Trump-Zitat machen.
Oh, yeah. Okay, but to get to your actual question, I mean, ich meine, es ist halt Überschriften, Headlines, es lässt sich, das verkauft sich gut, du kriegst Klicks, und mit Coronavirus lässt sich halt...
I think there's another fear that you're missing, is also the fear of the unknown, is that we don't know the flu originated, for example. I mean, they're suspecting bats, but nobody knows for certain. And there's some... But what I'm getting at is if we don't understand this illness yet, then that, I think, is also one other source of fear.
I mean, that's basically what it meant by fear squared. This whole thing with the coronavirus is just there's so many fears clashing. So many fears meeting. There you have this intersection of fear of an illness, fear of the unknown, of not knowing what this illness is, fear of the other, fear of and dieses nicht wissen, welcher Rattenschwanz an dieser Krankheit dranhängt, was es mit dieser Krankheit eigentlich auf sich hat, wo sie herkommt, wie sie übertragbar ist, sorgt eben auch dafür, dass die Angst vor anderen steigt, dass Leute mit Mund Schützen rumlaufen, die nichts bringen.
Dass die Mundschütze in München ausverkauft sind und nicht wegen der normalen fucking Grippewelle, was gerade rumläuft, sondern wegen Corona.
Kleines Aside mit diesen Mundschützen, das regt mich seit Jahren auf.
Tell us.
Das macht überhaupt keinen Sinn.
Mhm.
Wenn du selber eine Grippe hast, super, wenn du einen Mundschutz trägst.
Genau, sagen wir ganz kurz, wofür so ein Mundschutz da ist. Ein Mundschutz ist dafür da, dass man selbst andere nicht ansteckt.
Nicht, dass du selber nicht angesteckt wirst.
Der Mundschutz sorgt dafür, dass deine Krankheit nicht aus deinem Mund und deiner Nase ausbricht und andere befällt. Dafür ist ein Mundschutz da. Das heißt, wenn du krank bist und trägst einen Mundschutz, super, toll, sehr sozial, dafür ist er toll.
Aber sie heißen halt nicht ohne Grund auch im Englischen Surgical Masks, weil im Grunde, wenn du einen Chirurgen hast, der will nicht den Patienten anstecken, weil wir in einer aseptischen Umgebung sind. Das heißt, wenn du dann was über deinen Mund machst, dann schützt du den Patienten vor dir selber, aber nicht andersrum.
Ja.
Und das ist halt auch der Grund, warum natürlich die ganzen Ärzte und Ärztinnen in natürlich vor allem in Wuhan, aber auch anderswo krank werden.
Ja.
Weil sie halt trotzdem irgendwo angesteckt werden können. Und viele von denen auch wirklich einfach ihr Leben oder ihre Gesundheit opfern, weil sie zum Beispiel, es gibt halt gewisse Sicherheitsstufen und das, ich vermute es jetzt, ich weiß es nicht, aber die Sicherheitsstufe für ein neues unbekanntes Virus ist entweder S3 oder S4. Und das sind halt Sachen, wo wir wissen, dass sie für Menschen ansteckend sind und gefährlich, aber nicht wissen, wenn es jetzt ausbricht, kommt eine Epidemie. Und solche Sachen und unbekannte Krankheiten werden eigentlich erstmal da eingestuft. Das heißt, dass die Leute, die ganzen Kranken behandeln, müssen sich auch diese großen Hazmat-Suits anziehen und nicht nur einen, sondern teilweise zwei oder drei. Und dann auch nochmal irgendwelche Sicherheitsduschen machen und dies und das. Das ist halt wirklich alles Hochsicherheit für, also hochbiomedizinische Sicherheit. Und es gibt halt teilweise Ärzte, die dann sagen, okay, das mache ich nicht mit, weil ich kann mehr Leute retten, wenn ich nur eine Sicherheitsdusche mache und stecken sich dadurch dann freiwillig an, um den Leuten zu helfen. Und
aber das Ding ist so, also zum Beispiel der Arzt, der das ja ganze, der Arzt, der eigentlich davor gewarnt hatte, ja, genau, es war ein und dann von der Regierung, aber hieß es von wegen, er macht keine Hysterie und bla, und ne, er hat halt recht. The way I see it, he was working with sick people, he was bound to get sick. Also, weißt du, so irgendwie, ich find's einfach strange, aber ich find's halt krass, irgendwie Leute irgendwie dafür zu verantwortlich zu machen, die nichts dafür zu können. Zum Beispiel heute gab es einen Report im Guardian, des Royal Caribbean Cruises, ne, dieses Riesen...
du meinst wahrscheinlich Li Wenliang. Ich habe wahrscheinlich seinen Namen gebutschert.
Ja, sorry, I totally butchered his name, but him. Now, auf jeden Fall bei Royal Caribbean Cruises, you know, this huge cruise liner has now, as of today, banned anyone, passenger or crew member, who is a Chinese national or from Hong Kong or Macau. Doesn't matter where the fuck they've been. Just the fact that your passport is from one of these three places is enough to say, bye, you can't work and you can't travel. So you could be living in Germany your entire life and just happen to be a Chinese national or elsewhere. Mm. Also ich finde, also das ist, was ich meine mit so Hysterie. Und das würden sie nicht machen übrigens, wenn diese fucking Grippe aus Frankreich oder Deutschland kommen würde oder gar aus der USA. Und ich finde, das muss man ganz klar sagen. Die ganze Welt, vor allem die ganze westliche Welt, würde nicht so drauf reagieren, würde es von hier kommen.
Ich glaube, der Ursprung sorgt natürlich dafür, dass eine bestimmte Menschengruppe verstärkt ausgegrenzt wird. Aber ich glaube, diese Ausgrenzung von anderen Menschengruppen in Zeiten einer Krankheitshysterie, das passiert andauernd. Weil es war schon immer, ja, die übertragen das. Ich meine, der Klassiker, Juden, die Pest übertragen. Just saying, it's a classic trope in the story of
us. Can you scoot us away a bit more? You're a bit too close. I just don't know.
Yeah, aber es ist einfach ein klassisches Ding. Oh, es ist eine Krankheit, die muss mit und die wird nur von denen übertragen. Und wir suchen uns dann immer aus, wer die
vor allem,
sind.
Wenn wir sie als besonders anders empfinden.
A bit more, or slightly different example, AIDS and gay people.
Yeah, AIDS and gay people. Yeah. Ja, aber es ist, wie gesagt, es gibt immer, wir finden immer eine Gruppe, die dann die Dreckigen sind, die Krankheitsüberträger. Die finden wir immer, egal welche Krankheit es ist.
Untouchables in India.
Ja, aber ich glaube... Ja, countless examples. Aber ich glaube wirklich, wenn man halt von Westeuropa oder Amerika ausgeht, wer sind die anderen? Ist halt erstmal die eine Frage. Und zweitens dann, ohne Scheiß, really, Hand aufs Herz, Leute. Hey, wäre es jetzt der bayerische Corona...
Wäre es der bayerische Coronavirus, dann würde man den Flüchtlingen die Schuld geben, garantiert. Die sind gerade neu hier angekommen und klar muss es ja daher kommen. Und ich meine, das sehen wir jetzt gerade mit dem Coronavirus ja so oder so.
Es ging von Horst aus und dem seinem Schwein. Horst, der am Tegernsee wohnt und sein Schwein haben das Ganze gestartet.
Aber das ist ja das Problem. Es ist ja immer so super schwierig zurückzuverfolgen, dass du dann erst einen Monat, wenn du Glück hast, oder Jahre oder Jahrzehnte später
wirklich weißt,
oder eine Schätzung hast.
Spanish Flu.
Man darf sich nicht mit Spanien abgeben, in den Spanish Flu.
Aber es ist 100 Jahre später und man ist sich immer noch nicht sicher, hat es wirklich so irgendwo in Europa angefangen oder vielleicht doch in den USA.
Aber im Endeffekt ist es ja diese Suche nach dem Schuldigen, wo hat's angefangen, wer überträgt's, das ist ja das was völlig Banane ist, weil Übertragungsvermeidung folgt grundsätzlich eigentlich immer den gleichen Strategien. Das heißt, es bringt nichts, und das ist ja die Sache an Hysterie. Hysterie folgt nicht einer Logik, sondern Hysterie folgt einer Angst. Wo krallt sich die Angst als erstes fest? Und wenn es einmal die Angst einmal ein Opfer gefunden hat, dann bleibt es auch dabei, weil es ja Hysterie ist.
Vincent hat sich gerade in eine Decke eingeknuddelt.
Es sieht sehr goldig aus.
Dankeschön. Oh. Ja, aber ich finde, ich glaube, also, maybe this is me in my hysterical, misstrauischer worldview. Again, I have to say, if it had started here, I don't think we'd be banning all Germans from places.
But because we'd find other, but also possibly, but we don't know. The thing about hysteria is that
it's not rational.
It's not rational. Mm-hmm. So what we do know is that if there's hysteria, we will find someone to blame and we will blame them hard.
But then here's a question. But then if hysteria is not rational, how do you counter it? Because then if somebody's hysterical, then that would mean that you can't reach them with a rational argument.
I'm not talking about individual hysteria. I mean, you can always, like, wenn jemand Angst hat vor dem Coronavirus, dann kann man natürlich mit logischen Argumenten dem beikommen. Aber du kannst niemals mit einer Masse diskutieren, mit einer Masse argumentieren. Das geht nicht. Und das ist das Problem an einer...
Aber ich weiß
nicht, was bekämpft. Massenhysterie. Mit der kannst du nicht reden.
Man bekämpft diese aktuelle Hysteria, wie man Frauen vorher behandelt hat. You know, smelling salt, the massaging of the uterus, all of that, you know, that helps hysteria. That was a really bad joke. My point is, it was a really bad joke. It didn't land at all. You know, the treatment of female hysteria?
I know about the illness.
But now doctors are going around doing that too.
But it went up into the 1980s even. Okay, moving on. I think we should talk about fictional hysteria. Fictional racial hysteria.
Racial hysteria. The reason why I want to talk about that is because there's this really awesome show.
Really, is that the segue we're using? A bad hysteria joke.
A bad hysteria? Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Das ist ein holprig,
okay, do a better segue.
Okay, give me a sec.
You know, okay. I know how to do it.
Okay.
Let's talk about the biggest documented singular act of racial genocide in the United States.
How's that a segue? That's not a segue.
No, it is a segue because that's how the series starts. Okay, anyway. Okay.
But we have to segue to the series first. So, exactly. How do we segue from mass hysteria to this next thing without being awkward?
Okay, you know how?
I got it.
You try.
Do you know what would cause mass hysteria?
What?
A giant squid dropping on New York.
That's a good segue. Yes, that's a great segue.
Great.
You're brilliant. Welcome. I'll be here all week.
With the voice. So.
Yes. We all watched Watchmen.
At Nathan's behest. And I was very skeptical at first.
So was I. I mean, I think
he was very insistent.
I was very insistent because it was a huge surprise. I mean, that show was a gigantic surprise to me. And
You had me at the first scene, really. Like, you give a lot of recommendations, and there's no way in hell that anyone can watch all the recommendations you give. I try, but it's just not possible. And I started.
I second that.
I love you dearly, but it's not possible. And then I started it, and you had me when I saw 1921 Black People in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I'm like, okay, yes.
For those of you who do not know, which include me, the show starts with the massacre in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1921. That massacre, you should talk about it. You know
Why?
The most
because
about
I'm
it.
Black?
No, because you know the most about it.
No,
I literally did not know anything about it before Watchmen, that fictional show that is a continuation of a graphic novel about superheroes, showed me this thing that actually happened, which is incredibly horrifying and made me incredibly angry that nobody ever told me about this.
But that was the thing. Like, I was really... So I watched it with someone who is not...
You have to tell people what it is.
Yeah, okay, so Watchmen, it really shocked me because, you know, you hear Watchmen and you think of that film that came out with Jeffrey Dean Morgan, for example, and then it starts. So 1921, Tulsa, Oklahoma, there was this segment of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and those who don't know, Oklahoma is in the west of the United States, but very, very... Today, it's just very, very racist, very, very white, very, very corn. Like, and Bible. I don't know how else to put it. Like, some Republican candidates, they don't even need to go on campaign there because they know they're going to get voted there. Anyways, but there was this town, there's this part of the Tulsa, Oklahoma, of the town. And then in 1921... there was about 6,000 black residents there. And these residents were more or less entirely self-sufficient, for the most part. By self-sufficient, I mean they weren't buying from white people. They weren't getting loans from white people. They weren't trading a lot with white people.
Wasn't it called Black Wall Street?
They were called Black Wall Street for the most part. For the most part, like on an everyday level.
Did you get that from the show? I don't know if I got that from the show. I think I got it from after looking.
It's what it's called for the most part.
I don't think they mention it in the show. I remember. They did?
Yeah.
Okay. Then I got it from the show. But I know that after.
Yeah.
After seeing what happened, I Googled it and I was. Anyway, go on.
But yeah, it was
very
called,
successful.
It's still called the kind of Black Wall Street, but outside of like. But on a general everyday level, they were kind of relatively isolated within this otherwise white town. Long story short. We don't like black people being too independent. And within the span of literally 2 days, white supremacists, a.k.a. the Klan, which very much still exists today, by the way,
the
people.
KKK, the Ku Klux Klan, which was a... was back then an openly acting organization. They weren't...
They still are. I have seen a cross burning before.
Yeah, but even with even more impunity back then.
Oh,
than
yeah,
today.
Because they were like literally in the White House and very open about it.
Yeah, were like you could walk around with a Ku Klux Klan robe and people were like, "Hey, that's cool."
Yeah, they were a bit more in your face about it. That is true. Anywho, the Klan, but also with help of the National Guard
and the entire town outside.
And the entire town. So you had the Klan, then you had the military, which were, let's be honest, most people were in the Klan anyways. And then you had the town, which also a lot of Klan members anyways. There's a bunch of angry white people who went in and massacred. There, now, at the time, the Red Cross, the white-owned Red Cross at the time, only said about like something like 50 black people died. What we now know is at least a couple hundred died. Died.
You have to imagine that they rolled in. With guns.
With guns, with cars, with aircraft.
With aircraft. They bombed this they bombed this community from aircraft. They rolled in with guns. They killed with impunity. They shot people on the streets.
Think Aleppo just 1921 against black people. in the United States.
Weil einfach ein geplantes Pogrom.
Voll.
Ich finde Pogrom ist zu wenig. They used aircraft.
That's why I said
to Aleppo. Bomb them.
It was organized, militarized genocide, both from the government and from the people. And the United States government only acknowledged that this even happened and their participation in this in 1996.
There were never any reparations made. Ever.
None whatsoever. Hell, there hasn't been reparations made for slavery, but that's an entirely different episode. But I think the thing with Tulsa is that, you know, Black people have frankly been scared to organize since then. Mm-hmm. And unless you are in the Black community in particular, unless you're not, if you're not from Oklahoma and you're Black, you've, in my experience, you only know about it if you come from a family like mine, for example, who is kind of educationally privileged enough. Because most Black people don't even know about this. It's, well,
most Americans don't know about this.
Because, I mean, look, the United States has committed many genocides against Native people, against Black people, against any people, really, that's not, like, white and Christian. But it's big. There was nothing like this in a span of 48 hours on United States soil that before then, and there hasn't been anything since. Mm-hmm. And I emphasize in that short time period. And I think what's interesting about it is, so they start off the series with it, and I got it. I see Black people in 1921 in Oklahoma. I know what they're talking about.
The show starts with it, and it's this horrifying thing.
Yeah. But what I think is interesting is they start with it and 99% of their audience has no idea what they're talking about.
That's the thing. It started with that. And I thought, wow, they came up with some really horrifying shit to start off this show.
And you think it's fiction.
I think, mm-hmm. I thought what happened there was, they came up with this fictional event that then turned the world, if you extrapolate, because this show is actually set in the year 2019. Mm-hmm. And this massacre happened in 1921. Mm-hmm. So I thought they came up with this fictional horrifying event that then explains what the world is like in this fictional 2019. And then to find out that this actually happened, this massacre actually happened. I mean, some people have the audacity to call this a race riot, which is just...
It wasn't a...
That's just a bad joke.
Well, the problem is the term race riot in the context of the United States is complicated. Because normally when we talk about race riot in the context of the United States, what we really mean is a revolution where some Black people or Native people had enough.
Yeah.
And then went against white people.
And that's why calling this a race riot is just a slap in the face, because you did not have an armed uprising that was then...
But I do think it is true. It's just not in the context that we typically hear about.
Yeah, it's a white race riot.
It's a white race riot. And I do think it's true.
I just feel like... No, but I do feel that a riot always implies that it's rioting against some sort of oppressionary force.
Also, the definition of a riot is to some extent...
And also, a riot does not involve bombing people from airplanes.
Yeah, but you know, if you just happen to have... The thing with...
That's just... Calling it a race riot makes it sound like so much smaller than what it is.
But there's three things that I think are really important to just contextualizing the series. And I think that's why that's the first image you see. Because I think it frames how you view the series if you really know what they're talking about. One, this race riot, and I do think it's true, it was a white race riot. It was riot against Black
people. Riot is not enough. It's not enough because...
What would you call it?
It's a military massacre.
It was a military
massacre. An armed massacre.
But how it started... Yes, the military came in, definitely.
And airplanes.
Yeah, but I'm not... Look, I am not...
I'm sorry that I'm so hung up on those airplanes, but as soon as you have an airplane to bomb people, you're not rioting anymore.
Of course they had airplanes, though.
you're rioting if you use sticks and whatever stuff you find on the ground. That's a riot.
But it makes sense. Like, of course they had airplanes. You had this large area of a lot of agriculture where even back then people were starting to use planes for helping their fields. And it's a bunch of otherwise wealthy white people. Like, it makes sense that they'd have an airplane. And also, you're dealing with a lot of... And so here, 1921...
But that's why I say the word riot just diminishes what it actually is.
Yeah, but I think in the context of the United States, I think it actually is really fitting. I'm not trying to defend these white racists.
No, I know. I find this really interesting that you say it's fitting because I
need to know how it started. Because when I hear the word riot, I don't think of like an organized demonstration or organized revolution, you know?
Yeah, no.
But riot, how it started
was... when tempers flare and just people go nuts.
Yeah, and how it allegedly started... Shit, fuck alleged. Yes, allegedly, because it probably wasn't like this. You had a 19-year-old black man, but kid, he's fucking 19, and a white girl, probably blonde and blue-eyed, 17, and allegedly a black man slash boy, because in my man, he's a kid, allegedly assaulted this white girl. What was probably happening is they were probably had a consensual relationship.
They probably were just...
But it was DNA, yeah. Of course. Being
teenagers.
Yeah.
Being teenagers, yeah. And he was too young and too dumb to
stay away from her. And it's a story we've heard so many times, yeah, before.
Because God forbid you touch a young white woman.
Yeah.
And it would probably... Look, I'm not saying that, yes, believe women, and yet... But there's a long history of white women making up, being assaulted by black men in the United States just to serve racial purposes, and it pisses me off. But that's another story. Moving on. That's how this started. And because that's the spark, that's why I think Riot fits well. If that is how it started, and that enraged, that gave enough excuse on the already pissed off white community there, who felt like, well, we're not doing as good as these black people. That can't be.
It feels so much like...
And it feels a lot like today, which is why it also rings true. It rings true. The reason why this series works... If you really understand what they're talking about,
mm-hmm.
Remember when Trump got elected and there was a lot of terminology, especially in liberal circles, especially liberal people of color circles, about Trump's election was really a white lash, mm-hmm. to Obama.
Yeah.
A lot of white... And
him being the first white president.
Yeah. And a lot of white people, particularly... He's the first white people president.
That's for sure.
But particularly a lot of people who came up to vote for him.
First true person of color.
He's orange! But a lot of people who came out to...
Our presents are not just black and white anymore.
They're orange! But a lot of people who came out to vote for Trump, not all, but a big majority, mm-hmm. who don't typically vote so much,
mm-hmm.
were white, of lower sections, socioeconomic standards, so poor white people.
Yeah.
Who, in their minds, traditionally, no matter how shitty their lives were as poor white people...
Mm-hmm.
Their lives were never as bad as black people's were.
Mm-hmm.
And to have Obama in office for 8 years, I think really pissed a lot of people off.
Felt like oppression to them.
Yeah. But no, like because you always, I think in society, you kind of always need someone at the bottom of the totem pole.
Mm-hmm.
And these white people who, no matter how shitty life has been for hundreds of years, have always been better than black people. So that's why there's that term white lash. And so I think that's why the series also works well, because it's dealing in a way with the white lash that we're experiencing today.
I find it fascinating how it inverts some tropes about racism and how it deals with that. Because,
mm-hmm. And there's one last thing, mm-hmm. and then I will finish the historical, yeah. lecturing.
No,
I think it's really important for the rest, yeah. of the conversation. 1921, and in the series it is talked about, I've only watched up to episode 5, so I don't know if it's talk further. One of the first images you see is this black man, this father, in uniform, in a World War I uniform, taking his little boy and then hiding him and da-da-da. You had... World War I and World War II in particular were really interesting, racially speaking, for the United States. Because World War I... So in the Civil War, yes, you had black people. On the northern side, on the Union side, allegedly, you know, Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves. He really just wanted bodies, frankly. So, historically speaking, wars have been really interesting racially in the United States. In the Civil War, you had black people fighting on both sides, and the southern side, of course, not out of free will. And on the northern side, look, Abraham Lincoln didn't free the slaves because he was a really nice white guy. He just wanted more bodies and more cannon fodder. But the first time that black people were really kind of semi-empowered,
mm-hmm.
was World War I.
Mm-hmm.
So you had these black men who went over to Europe to save white people in Europe.
To fight for freedom.
To fight for freedom over there, and were treated really shittily by their co-soldiers, by their commanders there. There's also a beautiful scene in the series, which we'll talk about later. But the thing is, but then also by the people in Europe, and particularly in France and Germany, yeah, there are a lot of racists. But for the most part, they were treated a lot better by the average people here in France and Germany,
mm-hmm.
than they were at home. And then they came back, these men who had been highly skilled because they're working as mechanics and pilots and highly trained soldiers, mm-hmm. and whatnot, who the first time in life been empowered, who were the first time in life allowed to walk around with a gun. And they come home, and forgive my French, but they're just another nigger. And that pissed a lot of men off, understandably so. So when we talk about 1921, Tulsa, Oklahoma, one reason why the city, this part of the city, this black city, was doing so well is because you had these highly trained men who came back and said, fuck this shit. I'm going to get mine. And then on the other side, you had these young white men also who had been in the military, also frustrated because young men coming home from war is just not a good thing. Hashtag Spanish influenza, which killed a lot of people. Or and you had these PTSD. Two,
or PTSD.
But you had these two opposing, highly militarized train sides, and that so you take this young black boy and this young white girl who probably were just having a fling, and then it all goes up to hell, and that is the beginning of Watchmen, and it was so beautiful and so amazing to see that that's how that series starts. And if you really know what Tulsa, Oklahoma is about, like I've just spent half an hour talking about, it entirely, you know, the series is brilliant. And it changes how you see the series.
Yeah.
Now I'm done. Sorry.
And then,
do you need a breather?
No. Talking about race enlivens me. Alternative reality, but that was real. So it starts
yeah,
with reality.
It starts with a real thing. I mean, everybody who knows Watchmen, who's either seen the movie or read the graphic novel, and I really recommend reading the graphic novel because...
But I think we need a bit of summary about when we hear Watchmen, what do most of us think about?
Superheroes and just action. I mean, basically... I think most people, if they hear Watchmen, they think action movie by Zack Snyder.
Mm. When I heard Watchmen, I thought deconstruction of superheroes. That's what Watchmen is. That was what Watchmen did as a graphic novel, was it deconstructed the idea of the Justice League.
Eigentlich, was Alan Moore gemacht hat, war Postmodernismus bevor Postmodernismus cool war.
Bam.
Das ist ja der Art von Satz, wo du es auf Deutsch sagen musst, ist auf Ja auch noch krasser. Aber nee.
Aber deswegen passt es auch so gut in unsere Zeit, glaube ich.
Voll.
Aber vielleicht solltest du jetzt mal
zusammenfassen. Genau, kannst du mal kurz, so wie ich Tose gerade ein bisschen erklärt habe, kannst du vielleicht so eine Mini, weil ich glaube, viele in unserer Generation erinnern sich vielleicht noch vage an den Film. Aber es sei denn, man ist wirklich so ein Comic-Fan. Also was ist so Watchmen eigentlich? Weil das erklärt dann, warum diese Serie so gut ist im Vergleich zu wie Watchmen sonst dargestellt worden ist.
Oh, yeah.
Just like a basic summary of basic. How it should be versus how they're doing it?
Well, no.
Not should
wobei
be,
eigentlich die Serie nichts mit Watchmen zu tun hat.
Doch, die doch, Serie schon. Hat alles mit Watchmen zu tun.
Ja.
aber nicht,
okay,
nicht
nein,
mit Alan Moore.
Der Clou an Watchmen, also am Graphic Novel, ist, das Graphic Novel spielt schon in einer alternativen Zeit-Timeline, wo Nixon nie impeached wurde. Nixon ist Präsident geblieben und er blieb Präsident. Und er blieb weiter Präsident. Und er blieb weiter Präsident. Es ist 1900, der Comic spielt 1985 und Nixon ist immer noch Präsident. Und in dem Comic sehen wir eine Welt, wo der Kalte Krieg sich immer weiter hochgeschaukelt hat, weil Nixon ist Präsident geblieben. Das heißt, es gab nie eine ausgestreckte Hand. Das heißt, die Gefahr des atomaren Holocaust war gigantisch in dieser Welt, in diesem Comic. Und das Comic ist eben entstanden auch ist in der Zeit, wo es große Angst davor gab, dass die Welt sich einfach in die Luft jagen wird. Und erzählt wird, in dem Comic geht's um eine Gruppe von Superhelden beziehungsweise Ex-Superhelden, die Watchmen. Obwohl, nee, die heißen gar nicht Watchmen. Die hatten einen völlig anderen Namen.
Ja, erstmal die Minutemen. Minutemen. Dann gab es die Crimebusters.
Genau. Isn't that Minutemen in Anspielung auf irgendwas aus dem Zweiten Weltkrieg?
Die Minutemen waren eine Militia, nicht Zweiter Weltkrieg. Minutemen waren eine Militia in den USA, aber ich weiß nicht genau wo. Aber die Minutemen ist eine Miliz gewesen. Aber nee, die nannten, der Comic heißt Watchmen, weil sich darauf bezieht auf den Spruch Who Watches the Watchmen? Wer, scheiße, jetzt muss ich das übersetzen.
Wer beschützt die Schützer?
Wer beobachtet die Beobachter? Wenn jemand richtig viel Macht hat, wer guckt den Menschen mit Macht auf die Finger?
Who watches the Popo?
Darum geht's. Der ganze Comic ist wahnsinnig wichtig auch für die Geschichte von Comics. Aber was den Comic interessant gemacht hat, ist, dass er wirklich auf einer Ebene den Superheldenmythos auseinandergenommen hat, auf anderer Ebene hat er sich eben angeschaut, wie gehen wir Menschen mit dieser großen Angst um und wie lässt sich diese Angst beseitigen. Und einer von diesen Superhelden findet einen Weg, diese Angst zu beseitigen und Menschen dazu zu bringen, zusammenzuarbeiten.
It's so good.
Yeah, I know, it's so good. That's why people should go and read the book. Do not watch the movie. The movie is not a bad adaptation, but it changes certain things. So I would recommend...
Mostly the third act, though.
Yeah, mostly the third act. So most of it is still there. Aber ich würde echt empfehlen, das Graphic, ich nenne es bewusst ein Graphic Novel und nicht unbedingt ein Comic, weil es ist, es fühlt sich an wie ein Buch. Man braucht auch sehr lange, bis man da durch ist. Es ist wirklich ein fettes Teil, dieses Graphic Novel.
Und jetzt wird es keiner lesen.
Es lohnt sich, aber nichts.
Es ist gar nicht so dick. Also, das hat man in der Woche durch.
Man muss den Comic nicht gelesen haben, um diese Serie zu sehen. Das ist nämlich der Punkt. Ja. Weil die Serie macht wieder etwas, was die Serie ist eine Fortführung vom Comic. Also der Comic spielt 1985, die Serie spielt 2019. Also dementsprechend viele Jahre später. Alles, was im Comic passiert ist, ist in dieser fiktiven Geschichte der Serie auch passiert. Die ganzen Superhelden gab es. Es gab ein Verbot, Masken zu tragen irgendwann mal. Mhm. Und
was aber noch vor der Graphic Novel war.
War das davor schon?
Okay. Es war da schon illegal, aber es gab halt nur den...
Okay, aber das Interessante ist eben, der Comic hört ja damit auf, dass einer dieser Superhelden einen Weg findet, die Menschheit an einem Strang ziehen zu lassen. Und 2019 spielen wir in einer Welt, wo Nixon dann abgewählt wurde und Robert Redford Präsident
wurde. Darf ich kurz was einwerfen?
Ja.
Er fragt dann noch eine von den anderen Figuren, ob er das Richtige gemacht hat, der Held, der die Lösung in Anführungsstrichen gefunden hat. Und seine Antwort ist dann auch einfach nur, ja, aber es endet niemals.
Mhm.
Okay, so Robert Redford, for those who don't know, he's an American actor. That should sound interesting because Reagan came after Nixon.
Yeah, it's basically, it turns things on its head because Reagan was another conservative...
with no charisma whatsoever.
He was an actor who became president, who basically dismantled a lot of the social systems that were in place.
You mean Reagan, not Nixon.
Reagan.
Yes.
Yeah, Reagan.
You said Nixon.
Oh, I meant Reagan, sorry. Yes, yeah. Reagan. Reagan was an actor.
Who, funny enough, was a Democrat before, and then he met Barry Goldwater. Barry Goldwater, who is the forefather of Trump.
Oh, okay.
Yes, whose mentor, in turn, by the way, inspired Hitler. But that's another story.
I'm not surprised. Anyway, Reagan, Republican president, dismantled social systems. And so in the world of the TV show Watchmen, Reagan did not become president. It was Robert Redford, who is basically in this fictional world, is the mirror image. He's a liberal actor who
really
became president.
Hates racism, amazingly so, given he's a white man.
And he made sure that reparations were made.
Now, the topic of reparations, I will only talk about this very shortly. In the context of the American novel, the North American novel, I also include Canada here. Reparations is a very stingy fucking topic. We want reparations, okay? We deserve reparations. No, have I been afield? No. But guess what? Trauma is genetic. And my ancestors had their feet cut out from under them. Sometimes literally. And also, if you can't build generational wealth, it's not a fair fucking society.
Yep.
Hence reparations. But that's another story.
So the show starts in a world where reparations were made, but where racial tensions have reached a boiling point.
And where we have apparently won Vietnam, and Vietnam is a state.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's because that's what happened in the graphic novel.
In the whole universe, in the whole of Earth, there is one superhero. Mm. One actual superhero with superpowers. Mm. And that's Dr. Manhattan.
They basically took the idea of Superman and thought, okay, what if Superman actually were all powerful?
What if Superman were blue and had his dick out all the time?
That's
what it is.
Yeah, so Dr. Manhattan can basically do anything, rearrange atoms. And so he won Vietnam for the US pretty quickly.
Dr. Manhattan just waltzed through and killed everything and everyone. He was basically, the idea of Dr. Manhattan was he was the power of an atom bomb made manifest in a thinking
Hence
human
the name,
being.
Dr. Manhattan.
Yes.
Like all the doctorates who created the atom bomb, but you know.
And so, yeah, Vietnam is the 50th, in this fictional universe, is the 51st state of the United States.
Another illegal state, like Hawaii, but that's another story. I swear, I could just go on and on about this.
The cool thing about the show is that they take these outlandish-seeming ideas, these comic book ideas, and they made one of the most relevant pieces of entertainment about...
Which is oddly grounded.
It feels real. It feels like... Is an HBO show, and it feels like an HBO show. Yeah. It doesn't feel like...
A bit of a slow burn.
Like a Marvel movie or the Justice League movies. Although it has the same DNA, it feels like...
Vielleicht nennst du ein paar HBO shows.
Okay, Sopranos.
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones is too much fantasy, but... Sopranos. Chernobyl.
Sex and the City.
Sex and the City, The Wire.
Yes. Oz.
I'm thinking all these
reality shows
grounded in reality. And they take that sensibility.
And the slow burn in it, because I think that's really key when you watch excluding Sex and the City. When I remember, for example, Oz in particular, you know, it is a bit of a slow burn. You're not going to get that hook that you normally get within the first 15 minutes. And it also respects the viewer in the sense that you can go as deep or as superficial as you want. For example, do you really know what Tulsa, Oklahoma is about, or do you not? And I think also what's interesting about the... Okay, keep going. Sorry.
But you're making a great point, because you can come at this show from two different positions. If you don't know what Watchmen is and you've never read it, that show will still be amazing, because what it does is it creates these characters, these very real characters in very real situations, and it asks questions about how would you deal with this.
But what's also interesting is, speaking of like level superficiality or depth, do you guys know who Henry Louis Gates Jr. is, for example?
Henry Louis Gates Jr.
Mm-hmm.
No idea.
So remember, there's a scene where she goes and gets the ancestry swab?
Mm-hmm.
And the dude on the computer?
Yeah.
That's a Harvard professor on race, by the way.
Really? Yeah.
He's an actual dude.
Yeah.
He's the leading, next to like Cornel West, he's one of the leading black
people. Okay, then let's quickly talk about the people who make this show.
Who, by the way, and I have to say one thing about Henry Louis Gates, and then because it's interesting. The reason why it's also interesting, and that besides the fact that he's like one of the go-to people on race in the US, is that he, a couple years ago, was really largely televised. His white neighbors, who he's lived next to for decades, called the police on him once because he was fumbling around with his key, and they thought a black man was breaking into his white townhouse near Harvard.
I read that story. Yes.
And that is the dude in the series playing the Secretary of Treasury.
Nice!
And so my point with this is Watchmen...
But he has the same name.
He has the same name.
Yeah, right. So he basically plays himself as... But that show is so friggin', it's meta in all the good ways.
Yeah, so if you know who he is and what's happened to him, you're like, oh. But what I find, and he's also made a big case for reparations and genetic testing. This entire series he did on genetic testing and find out where your quote-unquote roots are. It's literally called Your Roots, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but, it's very, very punny where they show...
But no matter if you're into it for...
I think it's the ancestry.
The ancestry, yes.
But even if you're into it for race, like I am, it's interesting. Or if you're into it like for like comics, like you guys are. Because I don't dislike comics, but I'm not obsessive about them.
But also if you're just interested in good drama and good stories...
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those shows where when you watch it, you realize, wow, those are brilliant writers. Who, by the way... a lot of the writers on the show are women or women of color. A lot of the episodes are directed by women.
Which is amazing given fucking HBO.
The show itself, like even in the meta level, is...
And it's led by a middle-aged, brown-skinned black woman, Regina King. She ain't excessively pretty, she's not excessively light-skinned, and she's fucking middle-aged. She's definitely gone through menopause. And she's the lead of the series. That is revolutionary. Because the last time we had that was Viola Davis. Mm-hmm. It was an entirely different series.
Yep. It's, so this show, it talks a lot about racism. That's at its core. about racism and fear and us as human beings.
But intersectionality in that racism.
That too. And that's why we wanted to talk about this show. I mean, we're basically telling you all, go watch it, which we're doing, right?
This black woman has white adopted kids instead of the other way around.
Yes.
Amazing. And also, I feel like at this point we should say, no, this episode was not sponsored by HBO or Watchmen or any of its affiliates, although we would very much like it to be sponsored by Watchmen or HBO or any of its affiliates.
Yes. Give us money, please. No, but it talks about a lot of interesting things. And, I mean, there's a lot of things that we're almost at the end of this episode, but there's a lot of things in there that we should talk about. There's a lot of ideas in there that we should talk about.
Maybe we should just each talk about the best ideas they did.
Like some things I can't talk about yet because you're not as far, and I don't exactly know where you are yet. So the two of you, you should each talk about your favorite things.
And then we finish watching and then we talk
about unfavorite things. I mean, it doesn't do everything, right?
That is true. It is not the Messiah of series. It's not Barack Obama.
Unfavorite things. Wow. Yes. Vincent, you start.
No.
Vincent's a bit tired today.
I'm a bit very tired, but I'd be happy to go second.
I think from a like an industry perspective, that's my number one. Because no matter how good the story is, I'm also very interested in who's doing the storytelling. So as you mentioned, a lot of women of color, particularly, there's a lot of violence in this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sometimes worse than Game of Thrones level violence. And they're letting women direct.
Splat is a... It happens a lot on this.
The episodes I've seen so far, they've only been directed by women. And I find that very interesting because if you really pay attention, most things with a lot of physical violence, they don't let women direct them because we don't have the sensibility for it, allegedly. Frankly, they've never seen a black mother hit their child upside the head with a frying pan. They would know we're very good at violence sometimes. No, my mother never hit me with a frying pan. Emphasis on my mother. Moving on. And again, I think, so, the casting is really interesting for me too, because it's just not something that we've seen. Are they getting as well paid as they should? That I do not know. But at least there are these positions of power from a writing, directorial, and an acting perspective. I hope it translates financially as well. I like the fuse between actual historical fact, be it Tulsa, be it, you know, Henry Louis Gates Jr., and a couple other things, which I would need another 2 hours probably to explain to most people. My mother, I know you're listening. Mommy, watch Watchmen. You'll love it. You, it's everything in your library. and in particular, as we talked, I think it's a really interesting fictionalized way to deal with our reality right now, even to some extent, even in Western Europe, you know, with this rise of also racialized nationalism,
mm-hmm.
you know, that has come from many different places, but in particular as a response to people of color as refugees in particular, and people of color as migrants here. But particularly in the U.S., you know, the white lash that we just talked about with Trump. It's an interesting way of talking about it without explicitly talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And leaving enough real historical Easter eggs, though, to make it understandable. Because the thing mm-hmm. about Tulsa is Tulsa was very real and the effects of Tulsa can still be felt. And there were other Tulsas, mm-hmm. not as big and not as concentrated.
Mm-hmm.
And when people talk, and for example, when we talk about reparations, and people are like, but why reparations? You weren't on a field. Again, no, or like when white people say, but my granddaddy didn't own slaves. Yeah, but you're still white. And you had the opportunity.
And you profited.
You profited from like generations of privilege. And, you know, when people say like black people should pull themselves up by their bootstraps. How can you pull yourself up by the fucking bootstraps if you don't have fucking bootstraps to begin with?
Mm-hmm. Or boots.
Yeah. Yep. And that's why I like the series. What I dislike so far... I don't like octopi, okay? I just don't like squids.
And you will know what that means once you...
Yeah, I don't like squids.
It will all make sense.
Anyone who knows me, I don't do bugs. I don't do, like, fishies that I actually touch. I don't... And it's just... I don't like that. But that's just me.
And that's not a big thing.
It's literally a big thing. In the series. It's multiple and it's big.
No, but I mean, that's not a big thing to dislike about the series as a whole.
If you're st- staring at it all the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have very vivid imaginations. If a siren were to go off, I wouldn't think, oh my god, the bombs. I would think, oh my god, the octopi.
Splat, splat.
What I don't like about the series, though, and I have to say, and one last thing, and I've talked about this episode, I'm sorry, people. As much as history they give in terms of, like, actual real racial history, I think... Und dann muss ich weiter gucken, die letzten vier Folgen, um zu gucken, ob es weiterhin so bleibt. Ich finde es auch irgendwo minimal fahrlässig, so viel zu droppen, ohne das überhaupt zu erklären. Zum Beispiel alles, was ich gerade mit Tulsa erklärt habe, was nicht über Wikipedia wirklich theoretisch hinausgeht. Ich finde es schwierig, das alles zu droppen und die Sachen, die in fast jeder Szene rauskommen, die the implications, the imply, the choice of words.
That's what I like about it.
Yeah, but I think it's just a bit...
I mean, you can't explain... I mean, that's...
No, you can't.
It made me Google all that shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
And I think that's the best thing entertainment can do is...
Yes, isn't it? But given how this is not a... But what if black people ruled the world story? This is a complex shit, which makes it brilliant. We're also black people. We're also evil in this. That's what makes it really good storytelling. And to mix that so with real historical racial shit, though, with no ounce of explanation, and at least I haven't seen an ounce of explanation so far, I'm worried about that. I'm worried how some people might misconstrue that as, oh, it's all complicated.
Yeah, but the problem is... Once you start explaining, you take away momentum and you take away... I mean, you as a storyteller, as a director, you...
But you also get my concern of why...
No, I understand the concern, but I don't think there's a satisfying... Like,
I don't think so either. I'm just saying, like... Mm.
Yeah, but no, I understand that.
This is the kind of series that
needs to come... There's stuff where you
think... You need to be able to go to the Watchmen website where they have, like, everything explained.
They actually do have, like, the Watchmen... Cool. The Watchmen website, they had a... Basically, an augmented reality thing where you can go into the files of the FBI and read about things. And
Hashtag Hoover. But that's another story.
There's lots of interesting... Like,
yeah, J. Edgar Hoover, the leading racist FBI founder. Or second in command.
But, like, because there's this... FBI agent in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also... Or like the references to the Chicago black sites. Did you know that... Okay, so the FBI lady who comes in, you know, and they have all these like alleged white supremacists. I hate the word that I'm talking about, white supremacists and alleged. But anywho, these alleged poor innocent people, innocent until proven guilty, are on this black site by the police.
Mm-hmm.
By black site, I mean a unofficial interrogation center. And this FBI lady comes in and she asks this poor alleged white supremacist, sir, are your rights being violated? And he's like, yes, ma'am. She's like, I don't give a fuck.
Mm-hmm.
For me, especially, you know, starting this out with Tulsa, it's an unspieling to like the LAPD or the Chicago PD, mm-hmm. who have documented and admitted black sites still today, mm-hmm. where they incarcerate little black and Latino boys. And do what to them? Exactly what's in the series.
Mm-hmm. That's what I like about that show, because it
but people think
dredges up these things.
But people think it's fiction,
and that's that.
And it's not.
And that's the thing. I mean, that's what I like about, like, I googled. I found out that that's
you,
a problem.
You did, but
yeah, but okay. Now I see the problem. This, yeah, you see that, and you think, wow. Okay, now
I see it because I know this shit.
Yeah, and
I
maybe also... maybe some after an episode, maybe just what a text like the Tulsa massacre actually
and
happened.
With the FBI, what's interesting about that scene is not only the unspeeding to the black sites. Mm-hmm. That's one layer, but how she's like, actually, I don't really give a fuck about your civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
Is how the FBI has historically reacted to such revelations and still documentally reacts.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this thing of, no, that the FBI is not your savior. The FBI is complicit and really doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
You only get that gravity if you know about J. Edgar Hoover and the beginnings of the FBI and how they document people and harass people and how only 50, 60, 70 years later did they release their documentation and oh la la.
Breathe.
So
there is a lot in there to unpack.
That's one scene. And so the fact, though, that it's framed, though, as fiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see the issue.
Es wünscht mir einfach ein Footnote oder ein ganz gezieltes am Ende der Folge, klick mal hier, da ist dein Footnote.
Mhm.
Weil einfach, ich finde es schwierig in dieser Komplexität, was wir noch nicht so explizit gesagt haben, ist, dass in dieser Serie ihr Sachen, wie gesagt, nicht einfach schwarz und weiß sind und für die Leute, die Bösewichte sind, wo du es nicht erwarten würdest.
Mhm.
It's not like, oh, all black people are oppressed. And within that context, some idiots might watch this and be like, but wait, poor white people.
Okay, but then the question is this series made for the idiots, or is this series made for people like you that would watch it and actually either
Well, it's made for Google people who can afford an understand. HBO subscription or are smart enough to stream it illegally.
So, I mean, that might implicate that, you know,
it's... The average showbilly in Alabama is not watching this. That is
exactly.
true.
Exactly. And that this is actually made for people that you don't need to explain this
and
to.
And there is enough rich white liberals who will watch this and then we'll start questioning...
Yeah, but things. I mean, that's also, you know, a huge thing is that media also doesn't always need to cater to everyone. You can also just make media that caters to a certain subgroup that then takes a lot away from this because... for example, the way that this show puts into perspective the extent of human tensions or human misery that is always bound to happen. That's my favorite part, I'd say, is where, you know, even if, for example, the way that they talk about certain events mirrors how they would talk about, for example, how they talk about 9/11. I think that perfectly, you know, and semi-subtly shows you that no matter which alternate reality you're in, you're always going to have traumatized people, you're always going to have angry people, you're always going to have fearful people. And
government conspiracies about whether or not the big event that allegedly traumatized 1,000 people really happened the way it said it was happened.
Exactly. So you always have these nut jobs.
Did it happen the way we think it happened?
I don't know.
I mean, in the show, much more of a right to doubt it actually happened.
Yeah. No, I'm not in any way doubting that 9/11 happened.
No, I don't know.
Who did it?
I think that's one of the things where I could understand why you would say it has everything to do with Watchmen, the graphic novel, in the sense that the themes are very much not the same, but they go along the same lines of saying, well, just by mirroring you this universe, which is slightly different in many ways, but then mostly the same in all other ways, it just kind of, it just shows you who we are in a way that you couldn't just by having a series necessarily based in our reality.
And that's what I love about this, and that's what HBO shows basically are about. If you look at The Sopranos,
they have a good track record.
If you look if you look at Sopranos, if you look at Game of Thrones, the earlier seasons, if you look at
Sex and the City,
The Wire, if you look at Big Love, all these shows are basically about the human condition and about who we are and how we react to things and how we act. And I like about Watchmen specifically is that it's an incredibly complex snapshot of the American and human psyche as it is right now.
Mm-hmm. And I think also, there's no other... I think it's a really interesting way to, talk about 9/11 or talk about all these white women adopting little black babies. It's really interesting to talk about.
Or talk about celebrities running for president.
Yeah. Yes.
Or...
Which, why does no one talk about that much anymore? Like, people think, like, Trump's an anomaly. I'm like, no, there's this history.
But, a long history.
Yeah. Like, why don't people talk?
Because people forget.
Yep. And that's why.
That's why.
And it also just talks about hysteria really well, which brings us back to the beginning of our episode. Just watch Watchmen, people, and tell us what you think about it, your questions about it. If there's any footnotes that you think you might want explained or not explained. I don't know how... That's another thing. You wouldn't even know what you don't know. Because it's not clear what's fiction, what's not fiction. And then, also, apropos, was ich gerade gesagt habe, being like,
saying there are blurred lines. I'm sorry, there was no opening.
But I know people want to know about it. I know they want it. I know they want to know about the blurred lines. It was very weird. It was very, especially, I made a play criticizing that song.
The other day, I showed your trick
to a friend of mine where you play Blurred Lines on YouTube, and then you open another tab where have YouTube, but it's Uptown Funk by Bruno Mars, and you just mute it.
You mute Uptown Funk and you play Blurred Lines, and the choreographies, it just shows that the pop is a really good formula.
You don't think it works, but it works.
Okay, we can do that experiment in a second.
But do you know the songs?
Yeah, I think so, yes.
Yeah, we'll do the
The music video?
No.
Yeah. We'll show it to you.
You know I'm not a music person. That's the one thing I'm not.
A lot of hip thrusting and...
Yes.
People snapping. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, like, talking about the appropriation of music, and especially of black music. I mean, hashtag Blurred Lines, and at least... At least Bruno Mars acknowledges where his music comes from.
In the opening scene of Watchmen, not the Charleston Massacre, the one set in 2019, the hillbilly was listening to hip-hop.
I think so, yeah.
Right? Yes. Mm-hmm. And a lot of black people listening to country. Which is also, there is a lot of country music.
Hillbilly is way too nice a word.
Yes, they're also
You mean the white supremacist, racist fuckhead?
Yes, him.
Yeah, you can call him that.
With a fucking Nixon statue. But I think... I think the series is just very, very good. Very complex, very difficult. It's not an easy watch.
It talks about a lot of the things that we talk about here on this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's about fitting in.
Yeah.
And how to fit in different cultures. And like, because we all of us live in different cultures at the same time.
And it talks
you have your work culture that you have to fit in. You have your family that you have to fit in. And how you are different people in these different cultures.
Fuck, I just realized something. With religion, there's also a huge critique of missionary culture in it. With the lead character and her nun costume, and she takes these white women out of their culture, and people are criticizing of it, and they don't. And
Vietnam is a state.
Yeah.
Holy fuck.
There's a lot in there to unpack.
I just realized that she. Whoa.
And I mean, they talk about trauma a lot, and
Yep. So,
But she's like one of those nuns. Wow. This needs to end. I need to go finish Watchmen.
Nathan and Ezzy talk about American history.
This episode was not brought to you by HBO, unfortunately.
Or Watchmen.
We'd love to bring it to you by HBO. But...
If you're thinking about what you should do next...
You should get an internship on set.
You should go to the next bookstore and buy the graphic novel Watchmen. And then you should start...
Watching the series.
Yeah.
And then...
It is worth it reading. My wife did not know the graphic novel before we started watching. She was immediately into the show. But on episode 4, asked her to please read the graphic novel before we continue watching, because it adds a lot of depth if you know the graphic novel beforehand.
So my partner was very into the show.
But I think you can watch the first episode or maybe the first two.
I think you can watch the entire thing without knowing, having ever read the graphic novel. Absolutely.
I think it helps, though, if you have at least know... Like, my only contact with Watchmen was that Jeffrey Dean Morgan movie that came out.
I mean, the movie did a good job. So
with Patrick, what's his face? And
yeah, just knowing the movie is also good enough. Just the ending is not...
I think to get it, you need to know a little bit, like, who's Dr. Manhattan and the Silk... What's her name?
Silk Spectre.
And just, like, a little bit of things. For example, otherwise the FBI woman and what they're talking about doesn't really make sense in the...
Okay. And what else should you do? Follow us on
Instagram. And also talk to us. Listen, but you don't talk. What's happening? Yes, I am accusing the listener. Like...
Sie tragen alle Mundschutz.
Oh shit. Look, like, give us your thoughts, give us your questions, give us episode ideas. You know, it's really hard shit thinking about new sexy titles all the time.
Do our work for us, please. Thank you.
Yes. Yep. No, but really, like, all y'all listening.
Send us jokes, send us puns.
I know a few of you. I literally know a few of you. Some of you are. Anyways, just talk to us.
Hi, Ezzy's mom. And bye, Ezzy's mom.
Bye.
See you next time.
Mommy, watch Watchmen. You'll love it. Oh, this you crazy mother...